are backed with sincerity and indomitable will, then our visions will not only become come true, but also will be a blessing. If on the other hand, that if our wishes are merely lip service, then it may even attract evil eye of ours and will be a curse to other people. Look at the words she uses. You see, because her words are really mantramic and it has their own vibration. A happy new year to you all. This seems easy enough to say. We repeatedly do it, you know, every year to all our friends. And everyone expects some such greeting. This is the problem also. We expect to receive greetings. Yet, whether the wish, though it may proceed from a sincere heart, is likely to be realized, even in the case of a few, is more difficult to decide. According to our theosophical tenets, every man and woman is endowed more or less with a magnetic potentiality. This comes from the power of the mind, the higher mind, please, which when helped by a sincere and especially by an intense and indomitable will, is the most effective magic levers placed by nature in human hands. As for weal, let us then, theosophists, use that will to send a sincere greeting and wish of good luck for the new year to every living creature under the sun, enemies and relentless tragedies included. Let us try and feel especially kindly and forgiving to our foes and persecutors, honest or dishonest, lest some of us should send unconsciously an evil eye greeting instead of blessing. Look how sincerity and that indomitable will play an important part in our greetings. Now one may wonder that why his belated greeting for New Year is already 4 days old, and the first speaker already indicated that theosophically speaking, 4th of January is the New Year. Look at this, what HPP has to say. This is from ULT pamphlet number 28, A New Year. To be brief, it is January the 4th. It is there in your handout, please. The very first quotation. It is January the 4th, which ought to be selected by the theosophists, the esotericists especially, as the new year. January is under the sign of Capricornus, the mysterious Makara. During the course of a lecture, we will see what this Capricornus stands for, what this Makara, etc., etc. Of the Hindu mystics, the Kumaras being stated, having incarnated in mankind, under the 10th sign of the zodiac, that is the Capricorns. For ages, 4th of January has been sacred to Mercury Buddha. The thought Hermes thus combines to make of it a festival to be held by those who study ancient wisdom. We are studying indeed ancient wisdom. Therefore, we did greet you on this 4th of January, or the first day of the Theosophical New Year. Now, you see, this one may question our title, Powers of the Mind, what has it to do with the New Year? And then it is again indicated by the first speaker in the introductory remarks that on this day, it is very clearly indicated that the exalted spiritual beings, the Manasaputras, mind bonds on the universal mind, Brahma, gave us or the gift of the mind some 18 million odd years ago. Ever since that time, man became man in mind. See, in order to understand this, we have to bear in mind what HPP has to say. She speaks of triple line of evolution. he says that, you see, it's not only, you see, evolution but emanation. Unless something is involved, it cannot, nothing can come out of nothing, it cannot evolve. Therefore she says there are three lines of evolution. We will read that quotation again from the Sikh doctrine. She says, monadic or spiritual, which is uppermost. Then it is manasic and intellectual, the second line. The third line is purely physical, about which our physical science, modern science talks about. Then see, in the secret doctrine, she says, she talks about three upadhis, periodical upadhis, etc., etc. These three are the finite aspects, you must remember. You have the finite aspects of the reflections and the field of cosmic illusion of Atma, the seventh one reality. Therefore, these are all finite aspects of the reflection of that one reality. One, the monadic, is, as the name implies, concerned with the growth and development into still higher phases of activity, the monad in conjunction with. So monad is not as explained. We won't go into detail, there's not much time. The intersective, intellectual, represented by Manasa Dhyanis, the solar devas, Aragrishvata Pitris, the givers of intelligence and consciousness to man. And three, the physical, represented by the chayas, the lower angels, the lunar Pitris gave us the chaya or the body. On which, on the on chaya, or the, that linga sharira on which the physical body is modeled. This body serves as a vehicle for the growth and transformation through manas, and owing to accumulation of experiences of the finite into the infinite. We're all finite beings. We have to become immortal, infinite. Of the transient into the eternal and absolute. Each of these three systems has its own laws, etc., etc., she says. Now one may wonder, why is she linking this with the birth of the mind, the birth of the man? Nature, we will come to this a little later, nature, you see, produced at last a very good human form without the human mind. But the particular human form had a deeper and far better, bigger brain and having capacity than the ordinary animal species. You know, the right time for the Agrishvata Pitris and the solar angels to come down and incarnate in them. See what HVP has to say. The fifth group, that's the Manasaputras, belonging to the Manasa hierarchy, is a very mysterious, and as it is connected to the microcosmic pentagon. Pentagon stands for the five-limbed man, as we are today. Only Friday we discussed this five-pointed star. The five-pointed star representing man. In India and Egypt, these jnanis were connected with the crocodile, the crude form, unfortunately. And the reward is in Capricornus. That is the 10th sign of the zodiac, present zodiac piece. Earlier, when it had only 10, esoterically, it was the 8th sign of the zodiac. There are convertible terms in Indian astrology, as this 10th sign of the zodiac is called Makara. Loosely translated as crocodile, the word itself is occultly interpreted in various ways, as will be shown further on. In Egypt, the defunct man whose symbol is the pentagram or the five-pointed star, the points of which represent the limbs of man, was shown emblematically transformed into crocodile. See, this crocodile in France stands for the dragon of wisdom in reality, not a crocodile. He is a dragon of wisdom or manas or human soul, mind. The intelligent principle called in esoteric philosophy, the fifth principle. Then, she again says, Then she says, again on page 233, it becomes the task of the fifth hierarchy, the mysterious being who preside over the constellation of Capricornus, Makara. Therefore, we have to dwell deep into the very meaning of Makara. We'll go into it. Or crocodile in India as in Egypt, to inform the empty and ethereal animal form and make of it a rational man. As we said earlier, man was amanasa, without mind at a particular point in the stage of evolution. Nature unaided failed. Therefore, the intelligent beings gave us the intelligent amanasa. This is one of those subjects upon which very little may be said to the general public. It is a mystery, truly, but only to him who is prepared to reject the existence of intellectual and conscious spiritual beings in the universe. The existence of intellectual and conscious spiritual beings, limiting full consciousness to man alone, and that only as a function of the brain. Many of those among the spiritual entities who are incarnated bodily in man since the beginning of his appearance and who are, for all that, still exist as independently as they did before, etc., etc. Now, if you go to the third fundamental proposition, the first fundamental talks about the God, deity, and the second fundamental, the law of periodicity. And third fundamental, as Patanjali says, the whole universe exists for the evolution and emancipation of the soul. Therefore, the third fundamental points out, yes, we are all emanations in one universal oversoul. Undergoing an obligatory pilgrimage, it's a very cycle of necessity. Obligatory pilgrimage, please. Reflect upon that word. It's obligatory on our part to take up this necessary cycle. And we've been through all the forms of matter. And after the stage of man, evolution proceeds by natural impulse. But when man becomes man in mind, when this Agrishvata Pitris gave us the gift of the mind, what happened? Man became a self-conscious entity. He had a self-reflective consciousness by which he can choose, he has the power of choice, to choose between the right and the wrong, to either walk along the current, go against the current. Therefore, SPP points out, evolution does not proceed any longer by natural impulse, but through the self-induced ways and means of man himself. Checked by his karma. That is because he's a self-conscious entity. He's a morally responsible being. And then she says, look here, in this vast scheme of evolution, there is no question of bestowing something on others. Each one has to acquire this through his own effort, self-effort. And this vast scheme of evolution put forth by theosophy covers right from the minute of atoms, the mightiest of the archangels, through a series of transformations and reincarnations. This is the fundamental. Therefore, it is that third fundamental proposition which makes each one of us to realize what we are as we are here. Then, now how is Makara connected with all this? Very strange indeed. Makara, you see, if you go to the, in the 5 years of the Theosophy and elsewhere, the Subaros, essay on the 12 signs of the zodiac is profusely quoted by H.P.P. He says, I'm just quoting only a few lines from his, which are quoted in the second volume of The Secret Doctrine. There is Makaram, there is some difficulty in interpreting this word. Nevertheless, it contains within itself a clue to its correct interpretation. The letter Ma is equivalent to number 5. Or kara means hand. Now in Sanskrit, tribhujam means a triangle. Now, or karam, both are synonymous, being understood to mean a side. So Makaram and Panchakaram means the pentagon. What is the pentagon? Pentagon stands for man, the five-pointed star. It is the apex pointing upwards. Now Makaram is the tenth sign of the, and the term Dasadisa is generally used by Sanskrit. The sign is in question is intended to represent the various faces of the universe and indicates the figure of the universe is bounded with pentagons. Therefore, the universe, that plan in the mind of the demiurgos was in terms of dodecahedron. That is, in terms of 12 sides. We won't go into that. Again, Kara may be taken to represent the projecting triangles of the five-pointed star. This figure may also be called a kind of regular pentagon. If this interpretation is accepted, the Rasi or the sign in question represents the microcosm. It is this Capricorn represents microcosm. That is, where the great beings, having given the mind of man, man becomes microcosm. But this microcosm of the world or thought is really represented by Vrishikam. We will not go into that. That is Scorpio. From objective point of view, the microcosm is represented by human body. Makaram may be taken to represent simultaneously both the microcosm and the macrocosm as external objects of perception. Therefore, it's important. Therefore, what happens is, on the 4th of January, when the sun enters the sign of Capricornus, the present, the 10th sign of Zodiac, then where Mars is exalted. Therefore, we have to find out what Mars stands for also. We will briefly tell you that Mars stands for the Kumara, he's a Kumara. Stands for two aspects of Kama. Kama, which is very essential for evolution, for any growth, physical as well as metaphysical. But it has two aspects. The lower Kama, passionate desires, which is, yes, a use of physical animal procreation. And the higher Kama or Kama Deva, the formless, the Ananga, that which, yes, makes man an entity. It cements Atma Buddhi with Manas when he becomes an entity. Therefore, the higher Kama is the one which is the Kumara, which has to be awakened in us by transforming, transmuting, alchemizing the lower Kama. Therefore, Mars is also exalted there. It's a goddess, god of war, it is indicated. It's in fact, Kartikeya, the Kumara, Shivakumara, etc. Now, let's see what HVP has to say on Makara. Very, very significant indeed. The true esoteric meaning of the esoteric sense of the word Makara does not mean crocodile. Let's understand that. In truth, at all, even when it is compared with the animal depicted in the zodiac. Then, she points out, suffice it to say, there are various things which I am not quoting now. You see, suffice it to say, finally she says, as a sign of Makara is connected with the birth of the spiritual microcosm. That is why we are taking as a birth of man, the mind of man. And the death or a dissolution of the physical universe, its passage into the realm of spiritual. So the Jamchahans, called in India Kumara, are connected with both, etc. Now, with this, she points out the quotation that we read from the pamphlet number 28. She says that here what happens is it is sacred to Buddha, Mercury, god of wisdom. How is that connected with January 4th? Now what happened? There is an allegorical story. We will give the esoteric interpretation a little later. There it is supposed that Jupiter is the preceptor of gods. Now he represents conservatism, conformity, convention, and ceremonial ceremonies, rituals. He has a wife by name Tara. Tara represents the nobler feelings of a person, spiritual inclination, hungering after this spiritual wisdom. Therefore, it is suggested in the allegory that she elopes with Soma, the moon, or the king of King Soma. It has significance, we'll come to that. Now, out of that, see, the offspring is born. That offspring is Buddha, or god of Mercury, or god of wisdom. And the god of wisdom is supposed to be so beautiful that Jupiter accepted him as his own son, saying that he is born out of, or as a result of, following conformities and conventions and rituals. Now see what HPB has to say as this esoteric meaning. Soma is the moon astronomically, but in mystical phraseology, it is also the name of a sacred beverage drunk by the Brahmins and the initiates during the mysteries of sacrificial rites. See, don't drink, mistake it to bung and all that. Some people, even today, in some of the southern temples, during certain Shivaratri and all that, they drink that. The Soma plant is there is some Latin word, grimen, which yields a juice from which the mystic beverage, the Soma drink, is made. Alone the descendants of the rishis, the Agnihotri, that means who carry fires in their hand. They're called Agnihotris. In fact, a true Brahman who has realized the Brahman is supposed to be Agnihotri. He's carrying the fire, solar fire. The fire priest of the great mysteries knew all its powers. But the real property of true Soma was to make a new man the initiate. A transformation takes place, an alchemy takes place. After he is reborn, same thing is repeated, you see, in the, if you go to Egyptian mysteries, where the ocular demonstration of life and death is done, later on, a sun falls in his face through the aperture on the top of the pyramid. True Soma was to make a new man of the initiate. After he's reborn, he becomes a Dvija, the twice born. Namely, once that he begins to live in his astral body, that is why King Soma. See, moon is connected with the astral body, please. Therefore, that's why King Soma comes in. For his spiritual nature overcoming the physical, he would soon snap it off and part even from that etherealized form. Some footnote is there, we won't go into it. Soma was never given in days of old to non-initiated Brahmin. The simple grihastha, or the householder, or priest of the exalted ritual. Thus Brihaspati, the guru of the gods, Brihaspati, Brahmanaspati, is another name for Jupiter, Sanskrit name. Though he was still represented a dead letter form of worship, it is Tara, his wife, the symbol of one, who though wedded to dogmatic worship, though wedded to Jupiter, longs for true wisdom, who is shown as initiated to these mysteries by King Soma. Therefore, the transformation of astral body into something pure, something holier than the pure astral body. What does it mean? It is by purified thoughts that we are purifying our prana, and the prana circulates to the astral body and elevates the very status of this astral body to higher levels, which can be the vehicle for the Atma Buddhi. The giver of true wisdom, Soma is thus made in the allegory to carry her away. That's why it's in the allegory it is said she elopes with Soma. The result of this is the birth of Buddha, esoteric wisdom. Not Buddha's son. Mercury or Hermes in Greece and Egypt. He is represented as so beautiful that even the husband, though well aware that Buddha is not his progeny, not the progeny of his dead letter worship, claims the newborn as his son. It is the fruit of his ritualistic and meaningless forms. Even today it's supposed to be. Such is the brief one of the meaning of the allegory. And it is one of the meanings also born in heaven, etc., etc. Therefore, this clearly indicates to you what this Makara means, what this 10th sign of the zodiac, and also the linkage between Mars and these things. Now, also, I'm not reading that quotation. I'm just briefly telling you that here, in the war between Asuras and Suras, between gods and demons, so-called dragons of wisdom, in fact, you see, there was involved, Shukra was also involved. Shukra was the preceptor of Asuras. Venus. Therefore, Venus also theosophically represents the Manas aspect. Therefore, what happens is, the Soma, when the astral body is purified, combined with purified Manas, can give birth to Kumara. The Mars. The Kartikeya, Shiva Kumara. It's what we have to do here. A transformation has to take place. Now, we will see. Although this, we are mind-born, emanations of mind-born Manasaputras, why are we in this parlous state today? Selfish, materialistic, animalistic, all kinds of things. You'll see in a moment. Now, before that, please, there are certain quotations we have culled on the very nature of mind, that its dual aspects and all that. If time permitting, we will read. Otherwise, you take this with you home and reflect upon them. They are really, you will be able to, when you reflect upon them, you will understand that there's two aspects, the lower and the higher. In one quotation, it says, it is higher in the solar in the higher, lunar in the lower. That only indicates there are two things in man. One connected with the solar angels and the other connected with the lunar angels. Now, we will just see, as I said earlier, this universal ideation is inherent in the unmanifested logos. Please note that. If it is not there, there can't be Mahat in the universe, there can't be third manifested logos. The universal ideation is inherent, or mind is inherent in the unmanifested logos. When it becomes in manifestation, the spirit. And then this spirit gives birth to mind of man, the human soul, combined with the divine soul. Then what happens? The birth of human soul or mind. When we are talking about this mind, we are talking about higher manas, not anything else. Please. Therefore, it is said that we are all emanations of universal oversoul. That means we are emanations of universal mind itself, the Mahat principle. If we are emanations of mind principle, then why are we acting as we are, selfishly, fighting with each other? As the Master says, 2/3 of world's evil will vanish into thin air if each one of us should behave brotherly to others. 2/3 of the world's evil is due to man's inhumanity to man. See what is happening everywhere in the universe today. You know, what happens is when the universe comes into being, that spirit aspect is represented by Manas. Because as the Kirti Theosophy points out, Atma Buddhi, however potent on their own plane, they're absolutely useless on this plane. Unless it's assimilated by, reflected in, a thing called Manas. This Manas is the thinking principle. It's a thinker, the perceiver, who perceives directly, the pure vision, directly looks at the idea, says Patanjali. That means power to perceive is in all of us, But the power to perceive is not same in all of us. It varies depending upon the the various conceptions we have with regard to deity, nature and man. Sorry. Therefore, what happens is, see, what is the very purpose of evolution? Object of evolution. What of man here? Mr. Judge points out in the Ocean of Theosophy, it's not only raise yourself to higher states of consciousness, but impress upon all the atoms in your body and the surroundings with that higher noetic impulse to raise everything to the state of conscious Godhood. Now, there is another aspect. See, the other aspect is, see, when Kshetrajna is involved in Kshetra, or the indweller in an embodied informs and inhabits a body. It's for life is a great school made up of learning. But he has come here to learn from the school of life the world and acquire the worldly knowledge in terms of what? In terms of the higher manas. But unfortunately, the higher manas cannot function on this plane. Because higher manas is nothing but the Manasaputra, who has his own life and being on its own plane, the Arupa plane. We will see why it is so. Therefore, what happens? Higher manas is not functioning here. Although we are the emanations of Manasaputra, we are only having the ambassador who has forgotten his king sitting here, and it is through its alter ego, the lower mind or lower manas, that he functioned here. That's why in a couple of weeks back when we were talking about the birth of the soul, that is nativity of Christ, we indicated three aspects in manas, the animal soul, the manas per se or human soul, and the divine soul. Now, what happens is this. This mind, lower mind, is caught up with webs of passions. Therefore, oscillates between pain and pleasure, the pairs of opposites, and is full of prejudices, likes and dislikes, and also the pride, selfishness. Therefore, this cannot in any way make the manas to receive the beam or the glory or even the radiance of the higher manas. Therefore, in order to see that the manas is purified, something is suggested in our philosophy, namely to dwell all the time, even in our leisure time, dwell on the metaphysical and philosophical concepts given to us by the ancient world reformers, teachers of mankind down the ages. Then assimilate them. It's not only necessary to read them and dwell upon them. See, realization comes by thinking about them. But how will you? Just thinking about them? You can't realize unless you live it. So from that point of view, it is translated here. Now if you go to our, see, reading that we had today, everything is made clear. What did it say? Let's see here. Said the pupil, teacher, what shall I do to reach wisdom? In order to make the manas fully lit and make the manas a focal point where Atmabuddhi can reflect, we have to acquire wisdom. Now, what happens is, yes, the whole point is, it will be elsewhere points out in the Raja Yoga Rakatism. There are a couple of quotations there, we will see that also. What happens there, she says, yes, the Manasaputra cannot incarnate here. His form is incompatible with the present undifferentiated matter of the astral light. Therefore, when it sends a ray, it has to experienced in orderly differentiated matter, that is the essence of astral body. Although this ray is one in essence with its father or the Manasaputra, see, when it ensheathes in this astral essence, it's completely shut off from its parent, excepting through its bridge, imaginary link between the lower Manas and the higher Manas. That is why it should be said in the Transactions of Blavatsky Lodge that although Manas is unitary, it is dual at incarnation. It becomes higher and lower. Though whatever sins of omission and commission the lower mind does, the higher has to suffer. This is the Aja, the unborn, sacrificed. The very Logos, the Christos sacrificed, yeah. That is why it should be said that whenever we lend a deaf ear to the voice of Krishna here, we are crucifying the Christ within us. From that point of view, yes. Therefore, she says again, yes, when we think about the fate of the consciousness standing in the antaskarana, when it is dragged down by the karmic element, the horns of evil, then what happens? You become worse than animals. Most of us behave worse than animals, even today at our level. So when it is gravitating towards the higher parent, Atmabuddhi, then what happens is Manas becomes a focal point. It's able to reflect the Atmabuddhi Manas gold triad. And this is what is meant by one of the verses in St. John's chapter 3, where it says, the wind bloweth where it listeth. No, HPV says the correct translation of this verse is, the spirit goeth where it willeth. The same idea is accorded in Kathopanishad, 10th verse, the 3rd chapter, where it says, yes, there is no going up and down. It's not for us to go up. We have to prepare the mind. We have to prepare the vehicle pure. And the Godhead will descend into you. This is the meaning. That is where we have to make our Manas so pure, so reflective, that it can truly reflect the Atmabuddhi Manasic higher triad. Then it is called the very highest state of spiritual consciousness, even beyond Sushupti. Now that's only purely technical. Now we see what it happens. There were a person who is interested in taking birth in spirit, therefore elevating the mind to the higher state, where it can receive the practice of the Atmabuddhi. So he says, O wise one, what to gain perfection? Then the master says, search for the paths. But O Lanu, be of clean heart before they started on the journey. It is, what is your motive? Is it your selfish purposes? Is your motive pure? Are you able to understand the unity of mankind, the fundamental unity, that beings, although divided in separate bodies, they are not divided, in fact, separated. There is no such thing as separateness. Are you going to use all the powers you are going to get selfishly? Yes, therefore, you have a clear mind. See, be clean heart. What's the heart? What are you? What's your motive? Before thou takest the first step, learn to discern the real from the false. This is very, very important. How do you know which is real, which is unreal or false? Now, the whole point is here again, that quotation I put here. See, Shankara in his Viveka Chudamani, the question of wisdom, says, it is the mind which makes us think the unreal as the real. Because due to ignorance of the real nature of things, and as Swami Vivekananda says, yes, it is due to the preoccupation of our mind with sense objects, the objective universe. He says, therefore, mind is the cause of man's bondage and in turn of his liberation also. There are two aspects of the mind. The lower one is the slayer of the real. Let the disciple slay the slayer, says the voice of the silence. When darkened by the powers of passion, it's the cause of bondage. And when pure of passion and darkness, it is the cause of liberation. Where discernment, therefore viveka, has to be aroused, which is a faculty of the soul, please. As the light in the path says, intuition is a faculty of the soul, viveka. When discernment and dispassion are dominant, gaining purity, the mind makes for liberation. Therefore, if the wise man who seeks liberation strengthen these two in himself as the first step. So his dispassion has to be cultivated, and then through practice cultivate viveka or discrimination, which alone can distinguish between the real and the unreal. Mind is the name of the mighty tiger that hunts in the forest glades of sensuous beings. The voice of the silence says, let not thy senses make a playground of thy mind. We are allowing our mind to become a playground for our senses. Let not the wise go thither who seek liberation. Mind molds all sensuous things, that's not there. Through the earthly body and the subtle body of him who experiences, mind ceaselessly shapes the differences of body, of color, of condition, of race, as fruits caused by the acts of the potencies. But Shankara very clearly indicates, what is that? It is our passions and desires which make us firmly rooted to terra firma, to this body. For with the result that our viveka will never be aroused. That unless we awaken that viveka, our discrimination, which is the faculty of the higher mind, please. See, when we are talking about the powers of the mind, we are not talking about the lower mind at all. We are talking about the powers of the higher mind. The yes, mind, we know what it is. It is that ratiocinetic principle in us. It jumps from premises to conclusion. The premise is wrong, the conclusion is also wrong. It analyzes, it tabulates, all right. We are not codifies. We are not talking about that. We are talking about that aspect where, see, it is an aspect or a faculty or an instrument through which intuition can come. But it's not because of the intellect, please. We should not atrophy the mind. It is through the higher reaches of the mind alone we can gain spiritual knowledge. So that is through viveka. That is why what happens? We have to learn to recognize the distinction between real and the false. What is a symbol, what is a sign of the real? Changeless. Truth is changeless. Therefore, that which is changing is not real, please. There is that aspect in man which is all the time changing. But there is also that which is able to see the changing that take place in our body, which binds us, which is the continuing entity, which bridges the gap of sleep and dreams, which bridges the gap of life and death. Call it me whatever you name, or whatever name you like, doesn't matter. That ego, the higher ego, the individuality, that is changeless. Unless you yoke your wagon to that changeless aspect in you, the Krishna within you, you can never become acquired spiritual knowledge. Therefore, then, what happened? The ever-fleeting, the everlasting. We are going after fleeting shadows. Going after pleasure and pain, which are temporary, transient. That's why the Kathopanishad again talks about sayas and prayers. For 3 times running out. There, what happens? The pleasure of little work and the pleasure of greater work. There again, you see, Yamadharmaraya tempts Nachiketas with all kinds of things. But these will wear away in no time. It will eat away my vital powers. You take all these horses and chariots and these maids with you. He says, a young boy, who is, yes, hungering after spiritual wisdom. Then it says, you distinguish also between the eye doctrine and the heart doctrine. Whatever you learned through your schools and colleges and academies, A to Z, all the degrees, they fall dead, fade away at the threshold of death. Only that is consubstantial with the higher nature can become one with the higher immortal nature. Then it says, yes, the seeds of wisdom cannot sprout and grow in the airless space. What is the seeds of wisdom? See, look here. The unified wisdom of the whole universe. See, and I don't have the Kids Theosophy, some indication is given there on page 56 or 57. The abstract and the concrete. There she says, yes, the unified wisdom is registered in the Akashic Divine Astral. It's there. And each soul, the divine soul, when a human babe is born, it brings with it a ray of the spirit, Adamarasaputra, brings with it the seeds of wisdom. It's inherent there because that wisdom, it beams all the time and reflected on the earth. When you bring it, why isn't it doesn't sprout here? But in order to a seed to germinate and sprout, what is required?